everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Today on the show, I have Matteo Pellegrini, founder of the Orange Pill app. This was quite a conversation. We cover Trump, we cover the power law, we cover Saylor and MicroStrategy. It is just hot take after hot take. Matteo is awesome. I loved his thoughts and opinions on many of these very sensitive subjects. So trigger warning, it's going to get spicy, but I think you'll really enjoy this one. All righty. Like I said in the intro, I've got Matteo here. Matteo, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Thank you, Michael. A pleasure to be here.
I'm looking forward to this conversation. I think we just need to start right with all of the hot takes because you've got quite a few of them on Twitter. You're active and you aren't shy. One of the ones that's really been interesting to me to see, because there's so much talk about it, is MicroStrategy, Michael Saylor. I think you've got, I think there are a lot of skeptics in that, but I think you have a particularly contrarian take. Would you maybe frame your opinion of what's going on with Saylor, MicroStrategy, and then we can kind of dive into that further?
Yeah, I mean, sure, I have a contrarian take. So I've been around in Bitcoin 2017, 2018, and my memory is not great, but I do remember Celsius, FTX, Terra Luna, and you know I've done BlockFi. I've lost plenty of Bitcoin on BlockFi. When I see these infinite money glitch machine, when I hear this thing, it's kind of like I have PTSD from the previous cycle. I say, oh my god, here we go again. Now, to be fair to Michael, which obviously it's way smarter than me, knows a lot more about finance than I could ever wish to learn. I'm not implying that it's doing a Ponzi or a scam or anything illegal. It just feels to me that there is all this euphoria about MicroStrategy, price going up almost every day. And to me, it feels like usually when something is too good to be true, there is a reckoning day that's going to come. And, again, if you've been around in Bitcoin for one or two cycles, you would remember this thing that, we always, at the beginning of the bull run, there was always like ICOs, BlockFi, FTX. I hope I'm wrong. I bought some MicroStrategy for the record. I capitulated last week. I was like in pain. I was watching the price. Actually, I wasn't watching the price. Like on Twitter, you could not avoid it, right? If you follow Bitcoiners, it's in your face. So one day I'm like, I'm going to make a poll and I'm going to let the crowd decide if I should buy MicroStrategy or not. Obviously, I bought at the top, literally. I bought it, I think, last Friday, and the price has just been going down, and which maybe it's punishment for me being kind of a not even a bear. It's just like, again, it feels like, I think I understand the playbook of buying Bitcoin, diluting the shares, buying more Bitcoin, diluting more shares, getting the bonds. I mean, I've listened to Michael's interview since he came on the scene. And I remember exactly he was going to go bankrupt. His company was going to go out of business. And he found Bitcoin. And he jumped on that horse, which obviously it's a great idea. I'm all in Bitcoin. I have a Bitcoin company. But people seem to forget the history of MicroStrategy. And they now get upset if I remind them, look, MicroStrategy was a filling company. And basically they threw a Hail Mary with Bitcoin. And now they're like the best performing company in the stock market for the last, 2 years, which in itself, it's ridiculous. Like when you think about it, right? Like you have Nvidia, which is like the backbone of all the AI, boom. It's underperforming a company that, with all due respect, MicroStrategy is not doing anything of value as the company. It's just buying Bitcoin. So that alone for me is a huge red flag, right? Like, I have this theory. I heard it from somebody, the universe doesn't waste resources. And usually when you see this massive, the market is telling us something, that is obviously wrong. And usually in the long run, the market will correct. And maybe it's the bear market, maybe it's like something else. But again, I own one share of MicroStrategy. I plan to retire on that one share. But if it goes, let's just say I wouldn't be shocked if in 6 months from now, something happens with MicroStrategy and the whole scheme comes down and, you know, it all goes belly up. That's my take.
Well, so I am no Saylor or MicroStrategy simp. Like I appreciate the awareness he's brought to Bitcoin. I think in terms of pumping my bags and every other Bitcoiner's bags, I think he's a net positive. What I wonder is, it sounds like he has an intention to transition into sort of a Bitcoin bank. And so I think the potential victory for MicroStrategy shareholders is that in the future, if there is a demand for Bitcoin banks, which I wish there wouldn't be, but I suspect there will be, that basically you've got equity now in the Bitcoin bank, right? Like the biggest financial powerhouse on a Bitcoin standard. So I agree. Yeah, I agree with you. Like he's talked very publicly about his company failing, but I wonder, and I don't own any MicroStrategy. I focus on Bitcoin, but you know, if he gets to that point where like a Bitcoin bank of that scale becomes demanded in the free market, maybe, you know, it's just not a software company. It's not a failing or, you know, limping along software company anymore. It's just a bank. And, you know, maybe people today will benefit from getting in early enough that they kind of saw that vision for the future. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't buy that at all. Like 0%. You know, we have banks, you know, whether you like it or not. We have banks. We had banks for actually, you know, people in my town invented banking in, you know, in Florence, the Medici family. I literally come from the city that invented banking, you know. So the question would be, Michael, not Saylor, you, would you trust JP Morgan, Citibank, Wells Fargo? They're regulated. They have hundreds of years of history. Or would you trust a X software company with a kind of like a psycho founder that just go all in on Bitcoin and just get all the loans and leverage up? And God knows, you know, like, I don't think really it's going to be that. I don't really think that's going to be the case. First of all, they would have to get a license as a bank. And if you ask anybody that tried to get a license as a bank in the United States, it's almost impossible. I think, what's her name? Caitlin Long. The woman in Wyoming. They couldn't get a license as a bank. And
as a full reserve bank, yeah,
right.
They were too safe.
Yeah. We should be like the easiest way to get a license. So, I don't see MicroStrategy becoming a Bitcoin bank. Now, it's a great narrative, for sure. As narrative goes, that makes perfect sense. Would I give that a chance of higher than 1% or 2%? Honestly, I wouldn't. Now, we're gonna get a new administration in a few weeks. Things might change drastically. You know, Michael Saylor might become entrenched with the new regime, the Trump administration 2.0. Maybe there will be something there, but I'm highly skeptical of that narrative actually becoming a reality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and just to be clear, like, I think this is... It's going to be really interesting to see 20 years from now what we're looking at for, like, what are banks doing as we migrate to a Bitcoin standard? Adoption increases immensely on a global scale. I'm just sort of playing out hypotheticals that, you know, but I think you're right. The funny thing is, right now I think they custody at Coinbase, so it's not like MicroStrategy set up its own vault of some kind and they're just outsourcing it to the same place that all the big asset managers are outsourcing custody of the ETF products to. So, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know that I have enough information to make a guess, but I think your I mean, your hypothesis on this is certainly as good as mine or anyone else who's just sort of speculating on what could happen. Do you have any beef with Saylor specifically? Like, does the way he frames his approach or anything like that bother you? Or is it just sort of the concept of what he's doing? And or is it more the concept of people jumping on board and, you know, kind of taking their eyes off the ball and, you know, not focusing on Bitcoin?
I think Saylor is by far the best person in the world at explaining Bitcoin. By far. I don't think there's anybody that's more articulate and more persuasive about Bitcoin than Saylor. So I actually use Saylor to orange feel a lot of people. Say, hey, don't listen to me. Here's the video. Watch 1 hour. You will learn almost anything you need to learn. So Saylor as an educator is the best we have. As a financial operator, again, I am nobody in terms of finance, so I don't want to sound like I just looking from the outside. So one thing that I've noticed, and again, I've been following Saylor since literally the day he announced he was going to buy Bitcoin, so which was, I can tell you the exact date, August 8, 2020. Because I went back a few years ago, and I was looking at my Bitcoin purchases, and I remember on that date, I started buying more and more and more. Because I was like, okay, if that guy's going all in, I'm going all in too, right? So I've seen Saylor from the beginning of his Bitcoin journey. Excuse me. And one thing that I noticed for sure, and maybe it's a red flag, maybe not, he's becoming more cocky in his tweeting style, in his interview style. And if you remember, I don't know how long you've been in Bitcoin, but that's the Mashinsky. It's Celsius in 2020, 2021. He was very confident when he was in public. His tweeting was very confident. Now, he was running a Ponzi scheme. Again, I'm not saying Saylor is running a Ponzi scheme. I'm just trying to read the tea leaves. Saylor is becoming a little bit more too confident. I always appreciate the fact that Saylor, as a billionaire, multi-billionaire, you know, like super successful guy, has always had this like low-key approach to explaining Bitcoin, to explaining what he was doing with MicroStrategy. And in the last months, I've seen it, like it's becoming more like almost like a Twitter troll, replying to people and, you know. And so for me, it kind of like, again, it's in the back of my mind, it's like, oh, there's also that. There's also the stock going up like crazy, you know. And again, maybe it's nothing. Maybe nothing's going to come out of this. But as an educator, I think, you know, the ecosystem has benefited tremendously from him showing up to on the scene.
Okay. Do you think, so you probably saw the news that he's going to have like a 3-minute slot to present Bitcoin to the Microsoft board and perhaps sway their decision on a strategic reserve of some kind, or, you know, putting it on their balance sheet. Do you think that, does that sort of thing matter to you? Does that excite you? Do you think he can convince them? Because right now their recommendation to shareholders is vote no on accumulating Bitcoin.
Right. Yeah. I have a lot of theories, Michael, but one of my theories about the Bitcoin power law. I don't know if you look into that.
That's the next thing. That's the next topic, okay. I've got on you. Talk to me about it. Let's go there.
So the Bitcoin power law, which was, I guess, discovered by an Italian guy called Giovanni, is basically a mathematical model that looks at the past of Bitcoin. If you put the Bitcoin price and the Bitcoin time and the time on a log scale, it basically shows that Bitcoin has been growing on a straight line. Now we have the bubbles, we have the the bear market, but if you remove the bubble in the bear market, it's just going on a straight line at I think 5.7 times time. So basically, it's a mathematical model of the Bitcoin price that makes prediction about the future. Otherwise it wouldn't be a model. And what I've, I spoke with the guy that created it, Giovanni, which is a fellow Italian, but it's more Italian than me, so he has a lot of emotions. In any case, so I spoke to him and I'm like, you have figured out this thing, which is great. The math is the math. You can't argue with the math. But I think, as a non-math guy, that what the Bitcoin power law is really measuring is human nature. So it is not a financial model. It's a psychological model. Basically, the Bitcoin power law is a mathematical representation of human nature adopting a new form of money that we haven't had for, like, you know, since gold, right? And so, and it just, you know, if you know a little bit about human nature, psychology, you know, it's very predictable, right? So humans are predictable, which is great, which is why we can cooperate and have society and all that kind of stuff. And so it just so happened that humans adopt a new form of money at that kind of rate, which it could have been a different kind of rate. Now, in Bitcoin world, people love to say exponential curve, S curve, omega candles, which it's kind of like, you know, fantasy land. So what I've realized is that there is also like a relationship between, let's say, market cap and investors, and volatility and investors, and track record and investor. Meaning, when Bitcoin was much smaller in market cap, we had a lot of unsophisticated investors, like the degens, you know, the people at the beginning that didn't know what was Bitcoin. And so you had this massive spike because everybody was like playing with it. There was no really like a sophisticated investor. Now, as the market cap grew, it attracted more sophisticated investors. Like, for example, Michael Saylor, which obviously is very sophisticated, he showed up when Bitcoin was $120 billion market cap. MicroStrategy was $1 billion market cap. So there's like a 1 to 100 ratio, right? Now, the problem with Microsoft is a $3 trillion asset. And Bitcoin is now is like almost two, but, you know, let's say 1.5, right? Now, there is no world in which a CFO of a $3 trillion market cap company is going to go and buy Bitcoin. In the same way, there is no world in which... So now, here's the problem with Bitcoiners, right? We kind of live in this bubble where we think that outside of our bubble, everybody understands Bitcoin the same way we do. Everybody has done the work and read all the books and listened to all the interviews. But the reality is that outside of the Bitcoin bubble, and, you know, if you talk to a normie, you quickly realize this. There is no difference between Bitcoin and Dogecoin. The difference only exists in our mind because we've learned. If you talk to like your grandpa, your grandma, your uncle that doesn't own any Bitcoin, for them it's the same thing. Oh yes, crypto is gambling, it's a Ponzi, it's like it's a new thing. Now, the CFO of Microsoft is not gonna allocate capital to something that is smaller than the company itself. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So as a shareholder of MicroStrategy now, I tweeted to Michael Saylor, say, please don't waste time going to Microsoft. The playbook is going to the zombie companies like MicroStrategy used to be and talk to them because they need Bitcoin to save their company the same way you save your company. Microsoft does not need Bitcoin. Apple does not need Bitcoin. Google, Amazon, Oracle, you name it. Those companies that make billions of revenue, they have a growing business, they have a market cap that is larger than the asset itself, they don't need Bitcoin. And they want to adopt Bitcoin. So my prediction is, if you go back to the power law, it predicts that Bitcoin would be at the $1 million in 2032, I think, around 2030. So not this cycle, not the next one, the one after. So 2032. At that point, the Bitcoin asset class would be $21 trillion, which is more than gold. Or maybe it would be the match by then. Then when Bitcoin reached that level and has like 20 years of history, then you can, I think you can expect the big guy starting to allocate it to Bitcoin. Now when Bitcoin is like, the volatility is like 50%, 60% vol. Like, so imagine you're the CFO of Microsoft, or Microsoft, you buy, I don't know, $10 billion Bitcoin. The next year, you have to mark down that $10 billion to $5 billion because we're in the bear market. And then you're going to go explain to the board, why did you lose $5 billion? Do you think the CFO of Microsoft want to do that when they have a $3 trillion? No, of course not. And that's also, by the way, and that's why we have the power law. Because in order to break the power law, you will need so much capital to come into the industry that breaks the trend to the upside, right? However, that capital, which is like the Microsoft, the Amazon, you know, the sovereign funds, they're not even thinking about Bitcoin until Bitcoin is much bigger, which keeps in, you know, which keep this relationship between what kind of investor you get based on the market cap of the asset.
Mm, okay, interesting. So you would maybe frame the power law as sort of a way of understanding how and when people, institutions capitulate or adopt Bitcoin, in that happens in sort of a structured way. I hadn't really thought about the idea of Microsoft has a larger, I've seen the charts, but like Microsoft has a larger market cap than Bitcoin today. I guess my only potential pushback would be, like, we saw, and I don't know what the assets under management is, but like in Wisconsin, their pension fund allocated to Bitcoin. But maybe kind of to your point a little bit, it's like they did, that's awesome. They, you know, they checked the box, they're off zero. But it was like, you know, 0.001% of their assets, you know, it's like $10 million, $20 million or something like that. And it's a billion, you know, many billion dollar, tens of billions of dollar pension fund or something. Could you see a world where Microsoft's like, okay, because it's not just up to the board or the C-suite, it's up to the shareholders. If by some miracle they voted, yes, let's allocate to Bitcoin, it's just like such a tiny amount that, you know, maybe it's, you know, it's signal for where we're going, but it's not really anything meaningful to pump the price or something like that.
No, you're making my point for me. You're American, okay, right? Yeah, I think you're American.
Yes.
Okay, so
yes,
if I ask you, so there's 50 states in America. I'm Italian American, but you know, I know a little bit about America. If I ask you, Michael, rank Wisconsin from 1 to 50, where would you rank it?
Oh, geez. Probably somewhere right in the middle.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe on the slightly bottom half. I don't know.
Right. I've never been to Wisconsin, but I know it's a small state. Probably the GDP of Wisconsin, it's like, I don't know, a few billion dollars, right?
Yeah.
So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
At this stage.
It's proportionate.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right.
You're not getting to what they're.
You're not getting California. You're not getting Texas. You're not getting New York.
Yeah.
You're not getting Florida. You're getting the small countries. You're getting El Salvador. Super small country, they don't have a money printer. Again, kind of like you can see as a bankrupt country. And then you get the MicroStrategy of the world, a zombie company, not in my word, in Michael's word. In Michael's words, he categorized MicroStrategy as a zombie company. And then you get Wisconsin, which is not a zombie state, but it's a small state. It's kind of irrelevant in the grand scheme of things, right? And so, yeah, so the argument would be, okay, well, Microsoft, I don't know what's their balance sheet. It's probably like $100 billion. I don't know.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I know Apple has $120 billion. So let's say it's $50 billion. And you could say, okay, well, they could just buy $500 million. They wouldn't move the market, although they might move it because of the narrative that top five company in the world is buying Bitcoin. But again, you have to put yourself in the shoes as a CFO of a multi-trillion dollar asset and ask yourself, now you're a Bitcoin maxi, I'm a Bitcoin maxi. So if I was a CFO, of course I would buy all the Bitcoin. Now, the CFO of Microsoft is not a Bitcoin maxi. Otherwise, they would have done it already. It wouldn't have waited for the show, right? So we need to understand this is like a normal Wall Street CFO, right? What's he has to go and buy Bitcoin. He has to explain to the board. He has to do some studying, some work, you know? And then next year, Bitcoin is down 50%. Now you say, okay, yeah, it's only $500 million. Yes. So, but he still take work for the CFO. The CFO is not like your grandfather. Say, hey, here's $100,000. Go buy Bitcoin. Everything has to be reported. It's a public company. Everybody has to be reported. I'm sure they're going to have at least one board meeting. Is a $3 trillion asset CFO going to spend any time justifying a $50 million purchase? No.
Yeah, probably not.
It just doesn't make any sense. I listen to people that are not going to name names, but if they listen to it, they will know who they are. Smart Bitcoin with financial background keeps saying MicroStrategy or Apple should buy Bitcoin. And I get it. I understand the impetus. I get that part. But it's kind of like a kids. They have a lemon stand and they're selling all the lemon. I say, oh my God, I'm going to get a VC to invest in my lemon stand and I'm going to buy 100 of those. No, it doesn't work like that. Nobody's going to invest in your lemon stand because the lemon stand is growing so fast. In the same way, look, I'm sure if you and I go on Coin Market Cap, and we rank all the shit coins, I promise you, there's a shit coin that is outperformed Bitcoin in the last month, in the last 6 months, in the last 12 months, in the last 2 years, for sure. A meme coin, I don't even know, I don't watch it. Are you and I going to go and study that meme coin and allocating part of our Bitcoin to that meme coin because it's outperformed Bitcoin? Are we going to do that? I'm not. Why? But now imagine if you're that meme coin maxi and you come to me, no, look at the metrics, look at the tokenomics, and look at the adoption. I'm like, don't even waste my time. I'm all in on Bitcoin. I study Bitcoin. I know what's Bitcoin. You know, I don't want to even think about your meme coins. Sure, outperform Bitcoin. I know. There's so many things that outperform Bitcoin, but they're all scam or they're all like project the last 6 months. So it's just like sometimes it's hard to like scale the psychology from like the individual buying Bitcoin to the CFO of a multi-trillion-dollar company. And we think that they think like us. The reality is they don't.
Yeah. No, that's an interesting, I'll say, I think I have more sympathy toward the idea of the power law. Where it trips me up is it feels, and it felt at least certainly as when it first sort of came on everyone's radar, is like an update to the stock to flow model. And it's just like people picking numbers. And it's like, I just get so exhausted by that because like, I don't know. I was expecting Bitcoin to be over 100K. We're down below 92. And it's like, well, that's just because I had some dumb expectation. And the less you can expect of Bitcoin and you just allow it the freedom to do its thing and you free your mind of that expectation, I think the better. But I think you're making some interesting points about the way that adoption is likely to play out. And, you know, it seems to chart back well over 15 years to have done it according to some mathematical, you know, rhyme or reason. So that's interesting. Alrighty, you've got.
Can I tell you one reason why? And by the way, I was one of the people back when the stock to flow came out. I was all over it. Oh yeah, this is great. We're gonna go 100K. Let's, you know, that's. Can I tell you? I've learned the hard way. But in inside, it was so obvious that the stock to flow was kind of a scam or a failed model. You know why? The guy, the plan B guy, right, has never shown his face, has it?
Mm.
Now,
yeah,
never. Now, if you're a Bitcoin developer, you shouldn't show your face. You shouldn't go to conference. You shouldn't go on podcasts with your face. I completely understand that. The government might come after. I mean, the government has come after Bitcoin developers. if you're saying that Bitcoin is going to pump to the moon, nobody's going to come to arrest you. Trust me. The fact that he's never shown his face could have been the biggest red flag. So why is this guy not confident of his model? Because even he knows it's OBS. And then he adjusted it back. Now, when the power law came out, I had the same exact reaction to you. I remember the stock to flow model. Here we go again. Another model, another BS. It's the bull run. We're going to see all this kind of, activity.
Right.
But then, I talked to the guy. He's a real scientist. People with, Fred Krueger is a PhD mathematician from Stanford. Like, the math is right. The math is sound, right? The math is the math. You can't argue with the math. And again, then I keep thinking about, like, why does it even work? Now, it's funny because if I ask you, let's say Bitcoin doesn't exist, right? Let's just say Bitcoin is not even a thing yet. And hypothetically, I ask you, hey, Michael, let's just say somebody come out with a new form of money. We don't know the name. We don't know the blockchain. We don't know. Just say in a hypothetical. Now, do we think that this new form of money will be adopted day one from everybody overnight?
Of course.
No, of course. We don't think that, yeah. Right? Now, I didn't do it. It took me years before I even bought one Bitcoin. Right? It took me many years, unfortunately. And it took me more years to go all in. And I spent a lot of time. I was semi-retired. I had a lot of time. Now, it took me years. I don't know if it took years to you too, to kind of get an idea of Bitcoin. But somehow we believe that my grandfather is going to learn in 2 weeks or 2 months. And so we could say human nature has some constant. We have constant in human nature, which is why history repeats, right? Like history rhymes. And so if we say, look, there's going to be a new form of money, do we expect that new form of money to be adopted in a linear way? No, because and one day I might write a book called Numbers Go Up, which I kind of realized at some point that the whole thing, the whole Bitcoin, so basically number go up is the fuel that makes the Bitcoin engine work. And I know some Bitcoins don't like that because they say one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin, which is the most ridiculous thing to say. But basically, again, the power law just say, okay, we have 15 years of data. We can look at the price. We can look at the time. And it turns out there is an R square of 97, which is like incredible. But the correlation is so high. And I'm like, of course, because human nature is the same. It's the same in New York. It's the same in Los Angeles. It's the same in China. It's the same in Japan. Like, we're all humans and pretty much have the same desire, the same instincts, right? And so that's what the power law is. And it's in retrospect, It should have been obvious that human nature are going to adopt a new form of money, a kind of at a constant rate, right? Or like at a predictable rate. The same way, like cars, right? Like once cars were introduced and, they were safer, you could expect, okay, yeah, it's much better than the alternative. It's faster than the horse, it's safer, da 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 da. It's okay, the adoption in this country will probably match the adoption in this country because humans are kind of the same.
Yeah, so basically it's like at the individual level, humans are incredibly volatile, but in aggregate, they're predictable. And that's why we have, maybe imperfect, but useful tools like, the technology adoption curve, where it's like you've got the innovators, right. Early majority, like early right. adopters, early majority. Okay, interesting. Well, I think you'll probably have pissed enough people off with that. Let's move on to another one. So how about Noster?
There you go.
You seem to have some skepticism about. Oh, don't worry. We still have politics to get to. So it'll be good. tell me your thoughts on Noster. It sounds like you have some apprehension. where's your head on this? Do you think there's a problem to be solved with this protocol?
All right, let me preface my criticism of Noster by saying that I support the idea of Noster. So the idea being there should be a decentralized social media where you don't get banned, you don't get censored, you don't get, throttle, you know, you don't get demonetized. Yes, I like that. The same way there should be a monetary network where you can transact freely without asking permission to the bank or the government or PayPal or Visa or you name it. Okay? So the principle of Noster, I agree 100%. Now, the implementation, I think, is where we diverge. And, you know, I've had this argument with Jack Dorsey, back literally almost 2 years ago now. And the shortest way that I can express my disagreement is by saying that decentralization, it is not a technical problem. It's an economical problem. And that's all it boils down to. So on Noster, they think they can solve an economic problem with technology. However, you can't solve an economic problem with technology. You solve an economic problem with economic incentives. Now, let's look at Bitcoin, right? Because Bitcoin is the most decentralized network in the world in just 15 years. I would argue it's because economic incentive. I want to get rich. You're probably going to get rich. Or maybe you're already rich. You want to keep your money. You don't want to get deflated. You don't want to get stolen by monetary debasement, right? And that's how Bitcoin got adopted so fast, because people all over the world have the same problem, fiat. And the solution is Bitcoin. And Bitcoin works because you have number go up, meaning I buy Bitcoin because I expect in the future to be more. So I can conserve my energy, right? And I can pass it down to my children, something that is going to be more valuable, not less valuable. And that's how things get decentralized. Like you can actually look at this in like a society, right? Like, so for example, take an example. Take the military. The military is heavily centralized. Why? Because there is no economic incentive for you to buy a tank because maybe Mexico is going to invade you, right? Nobody's going to do that. However, what humans do, they say, okay, sure. We're going to centralize this function and we're going to have a centralized party taking care of the economic of this thing that does not have economic incentive. I'm not going to buy an helicopter. I'm not going to train like a SEAL. You know, I'm not going to buy 100 guns. I'm not going to buy a tank. Also, I don't have the money to buy that stuff. Because my economic incentive, they're not, I don't have any economic incentive there. Now, and so the music gets centralized. Let me give another example. Science. Science is super centralized. It's basically government run all over the world, right? Like the CERN in Switzerland, which I think is the biggest lab in the world, is completely centralized. Why? Because science has no economic incentive, meaning as a scientist, you're not going to make any money on your own. You have to go find somebody that pays you a salary, or which is usually the government, or maybe a pharma company. And so it gets centralized. Now, let's look at another example. For example, let's look at a gas station, right? How many gas stations are there in the U.S.? Probably tens of thousands. They're all decentralized. Literally, I can go in any city in the United States and I have 99% confidence it's going to be a gas station. Why? So the gas station has economic incentive, makes money. So everybody, not everybody, but people are incentivized to open gas station and grocery and pharmacy and this and that, right? Now, this is basically how things get decentralized, is through economic incentive, not through technology. You can have the best technology in the world. If people don't adopt it, it doesn't get decentralized. Now, let's look at Nosso, right? So Nosso has this relay client architecture. So the way it works, like, I want to send a note to Michael, right? And we're going to use a relay, which is somebody's server. Actually, I used to run a relay because I wanted to learn how it works. So I'm going to send this message to a server. And you need to be linked to the same server. And then your client is going to say, oh, you know, there's a message for Michael from this relay. Excuse me. And it's going to show the message to you. Now, here's the problem. The person running the relay has to pay for you to send a censorship-resistant message. Censorship resistance should be paid by me, or maybe by you, by the user of the censorship resistant, not by the intermediaries. So imagine in Bitcoin. Now, I'm sure you know the mining is already kind of fucked up. Mm-hmm. And they get fees and the block reward. Imagine if mining was free and maybe it was donation based. Oh yeah, maybe we'll donate to that. Like, it would never work, right? So now the problem with Nosso is that the cost of the censorship resistant is not paid by the user. Like in Bitcoin, I have to pay the fees to send you Bitcoin. The relays and the client setting up the infrastructure, paying the server costs, the electricity, the manpower, the hours, for me to send you a message. How can that possibly work in a scale, right? Now, if it's very small and if running a relay costs $50 a month, you're going to find enough ideological people, or maybe you'll find Jack Dorsey that pays, I don't know, $50 million to subsidize the entire system, because he'd understand that it wouldn't work without somebody paying the bill. And so I told the guy, hey, these relays are gonna get centralized. You're gonna replicate the same problem you're trying to solve, Twitter censoring people. Because eventually what's gonna happen in Nosterland, most of the relays are gonna drop off. Because it's, you know, people are not gonna just throw money for no reason. Some will. But, you know, maybe you end up with 5 or 10 relays, which is kind of centralized. And then eventually there'll be somebody that will say, I'm going to give you everything for free. You don't have to pay any relay. You don't have to pay any client, because I will monetize your data so that you can access, which is the same model of Facebook and Instagram and TikTok.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, excuse me. So I had this conversation 2 years ago. I say, guys, I think the relays are going to get centralized, and also the client are going to get centralized, because running a client is even more expensive than running a relay. And a few months ago, I was looking at a Nostr conference, and somebody was making the exact same argument about relay centralization. And now what they're doing, they're going to get rid of relays and they're going to put inside the client, which is centralization. They're removing nodes. Say, no, these nodes, we don't need them anymore. We're going to have the clients be in the relay. Now there's even less clients than relays, because actually creating a client is more expensive. And then what's going to happen, you get rid of the relays because they're not economically feasible. Then you have 10 clients. And then eventually people will start using just the best clients, because that's all human does. They will just use the best clients. And then you get 3 or 4, and then eventually somebody says, look, I don't have money to run this client anymore. And then you get to 2 or 3, and then you have replicated the
social media.
Yeah, you're going to have the Twitter and Facebook. Anyway, that's the problem with Nosso. It's like, you're not going to create decentralization unless you have the economic incentive in place, which, by the way, I told them is very simple in a way. I don't know if people would pay for it, but the way it could work is, when I send a note, I would pay one sat for each relay that I am subscribed to. So if I have 10 relays because I want to have redundancy, I pay 10 sats per node. Now, the relay doesn't have to worry about making money. It's just, okay, yeah, I'm transferring your node. I get one sat. Great. I transfer 1 million nodes. I get 1 million sats. And I can pay my server costs. I can pay my time. And that would get decentralized because more people will want to run relays, not less people.
And that's also a solution to spam too. You know, you think about like all the bots on Twitter,
right?
And if you can, you know, incentivize those to go away because there's an explicit cost to it. That's interesting. I haven't thought as hard about Noster. I mean, I've toyed around with it in that, but it does make sense what you're saying, that there's an economic problem to be solved. And if just like Twitter or Facebook owning their own servers and owning the platform, if that's what Noster becomes and Primal runs the relays, and you know, it's same thing.
Exactly.
Interesting. Alrighty. I want to get to Orange Pill app. So, you've tweeted enough about Trump. Talk to me about Donald Trump. Tell me what you think and, what you anticipate these next 4 years.
I mean, I've been a supporter of Trump since 2016. So I came to this country in 2014, so 10 years ago. And when I came to this country, I generally believed that the New York Times was basically the Bible. Everything the New York Times print must be true. That was my understanding, right? And then Trump, I probably watched maybe The Apprentice. So I used to live in the UK and I'm from Italy. So I have a little understanding of Trump, right? Maybe I heard it twice in my life. And then I'm in the US. I read the New York Times almost every day because I thought, oh my God, this is like the bedrock of democracy. Like whatever they say is important and true. I need to know. Okay, so the New York Times was my reference. So I'm reading the New York Times. And they start talking about Trump is Hitler, Trump is the monster, Trump is the devil. And I'm like, wow, who's this guy? Like, you know, like it's so crazy that the way they make him look, it's like, wow. Okay, this guy is insane. So I say, you know what? I'm actually curious enough to go watch one of his YouTube one rally that was on YouTube. So you know what? Let me go to the source because I can just go on YouTube and watch it. So I'm watching this rally. Now, this is back in 2015, right? And I'm like, this stuff kind of makes sense to me. You know, I don't really understand where is the demon, the devil part? Like, what is the evil Hitler part? And then I was like, oh, Trump tweeted this. Trump tweeted these crazy tweets. I'm not on Twitter, right? So literally all my source of information is the New York Times. Pretty much. And then I joined Twitter because I wanted to see Trump tweeting, right? Because they keep talking about Trump tweeting. And I'm like, well, first of all, it's very funny. And second of all, it's like, yeah, it kind of makes sense. You know, I kind of agree with the guy, you know, like immigrate, like I'm an immigrant myself, right? But, you know, I came to the legal system. They check me, you know, they know where I'm from. You know, they probably do a background check. It doesn't really make much sense to just let in the country, like millions of people. We have no idea. Like, we would never let people in our house that we don't know who they are. We would never do that. Nobody would ever do it. Even the leftists would never do that. So why do we do that as a country? It makes no sense.
So anyway, good question.
Long story short, few months, thankfully, you know, I've learned quickly then that the New York Times is full of shit, pardon my language. And it basically, my worldview changed because of Trump, right? Because I said, wow, if they lie about this guy, which I can just go and look for myself on YouTube, like it's easy to see, what are the other things they lie that I have no way to verify? Like, you know, like climate change, you know, or health, you know. And then eventually I discovered this thing called the gel man amnesia. I don't know if you heard about it. That basically said there is a, like if you read an article, take the New York Times, find an article in which you are an expert. So for us, it would be Bitcoin, right? And you'll read the article and you'll find a bunch of lies or a bunch of error or a bunch of mistake. It will be so easy for us as Bitcoin expert to find all the mistake. However, then you turn the page and you read an article about politics and you don't see the lies because you're not an expert. So you have the amnesia, but the right approach would be if they lie about something that I know, they probably lie about also something that I don't know. So I've learned that, you know, mainstream media is like propaganda, you know, this the journalists are like propagandists. It's not about telling the truth. They have their own agenda. Like we all do, by the way. We all do have an agenda. I have an agenda. You have an agenda. Michael says an agenda. Kamala has an agenda. Everybody has an agenda. This is not, you shouldn't be shocking to people to realize that journalists are humans and they all have an agenda. And they're using the media as a way to push their agenda, which is what I would do if I was a journalist, or you would do, which is probably what we're doing right now. We're trying to push Bitcoin or whatever we're pushing, right? And so anyway, so Trump, I actually met him at a rally here in Los Angeles back in 2015. Met him, you know, I shook his hand, you know, at the rally. And then I bet that he was going to win against all the odds. I won, you know, a good chunk of money, especially back then. Money were worth more. And then, you know, I thought he did a great job. I thought he did a great job until COVID, which basically nobody did a good job on COVID. Maybe Sweden, but who knows? And then, you know, the 2020 election, was it stolen? Did they cheat? I don't really know. At this point, I don't care. But I actually thought that after January 6th, he was finished as a politician. I think this guy is never going to come back from January 6th. Like, whatever you think about January 6th, it was not good. It didn't look good. It was, you know, I know people, they vote for Trump and they say, I'm never going to vote again for this guy because of January 6th. I said, okay, this guy is gone now. There's no way he's coming back. But somehow he did. And, you know, I actually said after the election of 2020, which I thought at that time was stolen, that I was like, okay, I'm done with politics. I'm going to focus on Bitcoin only. This is what I'm going to do. Bitcoin. I didn't have a company back then, but still, I was just like, I'm just going to tell people about Bitcoin, orange pill people. And I was like, I'm done with politics. It's all fake anyway. The media's fake. The elections are kind of fake. Science is kind of fake. The doctors are fake. Like, I'm just going to focus on Bitcoin. And then what happened is he got shot in Pennsylvania. I'm like, wow, I need to get back into politics. Because literally the regime is trying to kill his opponent. And if they do that, it's over for America. If you can kill your political opponent, you don't have a democracy anymore. It's done. They're just going to win every election. Now, coming from Italy or Europe, I have a perspective that Europe of today only exists because of the United States. Because if you look at Europe before World War II, it would be a country full of dictatorship, Nazi, fascism. Like, my country invented fascism. Like, there was Italy, there was Mussolini, there was Franco. Dictatorship all over Europe. We have been at war with each other for hundreds of years. France against Germany, France against England, Italy against France, you name it. And then the U.S. show up, won the World War II, install bases all over Europe, right? Like, in my country, there are 7 U.S. bases in one country. Now, not NATO. Maybe they are NATO now, I don't know. But literally, you go there and it's U.S. soil, right? Like, there's a place where I used to go as a kid to the beach with my family. There's a massive base, like hundreds of miles of base, right? And as a kid, it was like, wow, these are the Americans, you know, the big planes. It was like, so basically Europe is a colony of the United States, militarily and financially. And I realized if the U.S. falls, Europe is going to fall. And if Europe is going to fall, which all of my family is there, there is no place to escape anymore. Like, you want to go to Russia, you're going to go to China, you're going to go to North Korea, you're going to go to Japan. Where are you going to escape? You're going to go to Canada. It's not going to be, Canada only works because of the U.S., right? Mm-hmm. And so I realized, okay, I need to get back into politics and do whatever I can to prevent the regime from basically killing the United States. Because if that happens, we will revert to like a pre-World War II world, which was not a nice place. Everywhere. And so I was very happy that kind of, you know, once Biden dropped out, I knew he was going to win because Kamala was so bad. I bet again, you know, I bet basically three times. I won two out of three. So, you know, I'm in the money, I guess. Kamala was terrible. You know, I couldn't get an answer. Couldn't give an answer. And also I realized at some point, which is why I told my wife, hey, let's sell some Bitcoin and bet more. When she started doing interviews, I'm like, huh, something changed here. She used not to do interview. And now she's doing interview 1 month before the election. That means only one thing. The internal polls, but by the way, the public polls are all
bad.
That must be bad. You don't change your strategy if you're winning. You only change if you're losing. So at that point, I was like, okay, Trump is going to win. Now, what do I think of Trump and Bitcoin? Now, is he a Bitcoiner? Is he a Bitcoin maxi? Of course, no. This guy is 80 years old. He's going to be the president. He has business. He has 25,000 kids. He doesn't have time to listen to Michael Saylor the way we did. Is he a shitcoiner? Maybe. Do I really care? Like, I was a shitcoiner, by the way. I don't know if you were, but I had my shitcoiner phase.
Yeah, at a brief stint.
Yeah. So do I judge him? So he used to say Bitcoin is a scam. Then he is buying shitcoins, he has his own token, whatever. He's going to PubKey to buy a burger in Bitcoin. Now, do I care? Is his own wallet? Of course not. It doesn't matter. What matters is the message that come out that the president of the United States went to a pub run by one of my friends, by the way, and buying Bitcoin. Like, Kamala could have done that. He didn't do that. She didn't do that. So it's not like Trump is just on. It's not just Trump is lounging around and somebody invited him to PubKey. No. This comes from the top. Like, we should do this because we want to promote this idea. It's not random like you and I, oh, let's go to get a PubKey. Let's go to get a beer. It doesn't work like that when you're at that level. And so the fact that he's going to be the, and also, you know, he came to Nashville, actually was in the room for the speech, historic speech. Now, people are upset that he didn't promise to buy 4 million Bitcoins like RFK did. And I'm like, do you know anything about negotiation at all? Probably not. If you know anything about negotiation, you do not signal 6 months before you, first of all, you're not even president, but even you don't tell the rest of the world, hey, China, hey, Russia, the moment I get into the office, I'm going to buy 1 million Bitcoin. Because what they're going to do, they're going to front run you. It's the stupidest idea ever to announce it 6 months. Now, if you're RFK Jr. and you have no chance of winning, you can promise whatever you want because it doesn't make any difference, right? But yeah, people get upset because Trump didn't promise things he couldn't promise. And even if he did, he shouldn't have promised. Now, what do I expect from Trump, from the Trump presidency? Well, number one, that it's not going to arrest developers like the previous administration. I don't really care if they do the strategic Bitcoin reserve. I don't care. I don't think it's even a good idea. I would hope that he free Ross on day one or, you know, week one, whatever. I actually made a bet with somebody that he's going to do that. And he just, all we need, honestly, is that to be left alone. That's all we need. We don't want to get Trump becoming a Bitcoin developer or running a Bitcoin meetup. We don't need that. All we need is to be left alone so we can build the infrastructure. So, for example, one of the things that I almost built in Orange Flap is a Bitcoin wallet. Because, you know, most people don't know what is a Lightning Network. It's crazy. I built that thing. And then, if you remember, there was an FBI notice that came a few months ago that says if you're running a, basically it's illegal to self-custody Bitcoin, something like that. And I'm like, okay, I'm not launching the wallet anymore because I don't want to get the FBI at my door. And so I believe that when Trump gets in, I will be able to launch that wallet, which is going to make the Bitcoin network more resistant to censorship, right? If more Bitcoin apps have a Bitcoin wallet by default, we make the network more decentralized, more anti-fragile. And so there's a bunch of things that I want to build on Orange Flap that I cannot do it now because, you know, the regime is kind of hostile to crypto/Bitcoin. So I believe Trump would be at least not hostile to Bitcoin. That's really all I wish for.
I had, I don't know if you know Michelle Weekly, I had her on the podcast a few months ago. And that was sort of her take. We talked about Trump, and that was sort of her take as someone who's working. She works for Byte Federal, and so they've got ATMs and some other products. And she's like, most people don't realize just how harsh the regulatory environment is and how difficult some of this stuff is. And that's kind of been my thing is like, I think there are a lot of proactive measures I think a Trump administration could take that would accelerate adoption, kick off global game theory, all that stuff. But I think that at the very least, if we have 4 years of uninterrupted building, I think that there's no going back. No one's going to kill Bitcoin, but for the next 20 years, they could make it a huge pain. And if we can have 4 years of uninterrupted building where it becomes embedded to the point where it's like, there's no point in even trying to claw this back, 4 years from now, I think that's what we need. And, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic of any politician, but I think we definitely have the better option. I think that almost goes without saying if you're paying any attention to, almost any issue. And man, I'm hopeful for you, especially as someone who is building in that way that, our business will be unaffected. I mean, we only accept Bitcoin. We're based in Europe. We don't have to KYC anyone. Like we're just helping people custody their Bitcoin, protect their online privacy, right? But for someone thinking about a wallet, for example, you've either got a huge headache on your hands or you can just do what you want to do. And that could be absolutely massive. So hey, we're at an hour. Are you okay for just a couple more minutes to talk about OPA?
Yeah, sure.
So why don't you just talk to me a little bit about OPA, the inspiration? I've been a user for a couple of years. I don't use it as heavily as I should, but there have been times where I'm like, oh yeah, I need to, especially earlier on in my journey. It's like I felt so lonely as like a guy who was like, the tinfoil hat was going on and all of my preconceived biases were being shed and like no one in my life understood what I was talking about. And so it was a great relief to like have some people I could go on and, kind of communicate with. So why don't you talk about the inspiration and maybe a bit about where you see it heading?
Right. So, I can tell you the quick version of the story, how I basically came out with the deal of Orange Flap. Which is, so I got in Bitcoin 2018, let's say, literally when the Bitcoin standard came out. Go down the rabbit hole, shitcoin phase, all that kind of stuff. And then by 2020, I was pretty much a maxi. And then I'm like, okay, I keep listening to podcasts, let's go meet some Bitcoiners. So I flew to Miami for Bitcoin 2021. Which is where Bukele announced, I mean, Jack Mueller's, whatever, they announced the El Salvador legal tender, right? So, and for the first time in my life, I met Bill Connors. Like, wow, this is amazing. Like, everybody's a friend. The energy is great. I can talk to people without looking like an alien, basically. Because now we have the ETF. Back then, there was no ETF. Like, it was even harder to be a Bitcoiner, right? And so, you know, I had a great time in Miami. Came back to LA. And I'm like, okay, let's go find some local Bitcoiners, right? Because this is great, you know? And then October 2021, I found a meetup. I drove an hour, because in LA, pretty much everything's an hour driving. I go to this meetup, and I kid you not, half of the people at this Bitcoin meetup that I found on meetup.com were like NFT, Ethereum. And I'm like, wow, what a waste. So I didn't make any friends, obviously, you know. And I'm driving back, and I'm like, there's got to be another way to find local Bitcoiners that I don't know of, because, you know, this is not good, obviously. And I literally, like, you know, I live in Santa Monica. I'm undoxing myself, whatever. So I live in Santa Monica. I Google it. How many people live in Santa Monica? It's like 200,000. And I'm like, and so I'm like, okay, so if there is 0.1% of people in Santa Monica that are Bitcoiner, it's 200, I should be able to find 10, right? And I had no idea. Because obviously on Twitter, you don't, you know, people don't say, hey, this is what I am, come and meet me. And so, you know, since October, November, December, January, like that winter, I was like, I was trying to solve that problem, and I couldn't figure it out. And then one day, one of my friends here said, hey, I'm building a dating app for people that are active. Like, if you're a surfer, you want to date a surfer. And I'm like, huh, that's how you find local people that have your interest. You have a dating app. Now the jokes are, because a dating app is not. Although somebody got married through Orange Bowl app.
That's amazing.
They didn't want to invite me, but that's okay. In any case, so I'm like, huh, you have a smartphone with the geolocation, you have profiles, and you have a chat. If you put these four together, you can find local Bitcoiners. Now, my next problem was, how do I prevent the app becoming a replica of the Mesa, which people say they're Bitcoin, but they're not Bitcoin. They might have some Bitcoin, but they're really more into NFT. And so eventually I was like, okay, I'm going to copy the Bitcoin model, which is proof of work, meaning you have to pay. The miner has to pay. Everybody has to pay to join the network. Like, you know, Bitcoin is the most expensive technology you can think of when you actually thought about it, right? All the energy, all the money, right? And I'm like, I'm going to use the same exact method that Bitcoin uses to filter out the noise. So Orange Bowl app. So we launched it in November of 2022, literally at the bottom of the bear market. Like, FTX blew up on a Friday. We launched on a Wednesday, the next Wednesday. Pacific Bitcoin. Actually, it was a great time to launch. Actually, now I know it was actually probably the best time to launch an app to make Bitcoin friends. Because when Bitcoin goes from 69 to 15, nobody wants to hear about Bitcoin. Literally, nobody. Except people that are in Bitcoin, right? And so so we launched. There was paywall from day one. We never had free trials. Thank God. Because, you know, you would get spammers, scammers. And then I realized, you know, If Michael and Mattel, they chat on Orange Bowl app, and then they meet each other, because that's the goal, right? The goal is to go for a drink and to become friends. And one of us is a shitcoiner or a spammer or a scammer, like, that's the end of the app. Now, I'd rather have fewer relationship of high value. So it's been paywall from day one, and it worked. I mean, that's the magic that actually we just passed 2 days ago, 14,000 members all over the world, like mostly US, Canada, UK, Germany. Excuse me. And so it's a you know, the technical description is a location-based social network for Bitcoiners. Now, it's called a social network and not a social media because there is no feed. There is no post. There is no relay. There is no tweets. There is no share. None of that. The goal is literally like, I want to meet Bitcoiners. You know, again, the Bitcoin journey can be very lonely, right? Like we all gone that kind of like the hero's journey almost. You find something that, oh my God, I found something that nobody knows. You try to tell everybody and people think you're crazy. Then you kind of become lonely, which is, by the way, why we spend so much time on Twitter and podcasts. And then eventually you're like, okay, but I'm still a human. I want to have human connection. I want to have human relationship. And, you know, another thing that I say, like, if you think about your life, Michael, and if I ask you, you don't have to answer, but if I ask you, what are the three best moments of your life? I would bet all of those moments include another person. Maybe your wife, maybe your best friend, maybe, I don't know, you won a championship or something. I don't know. Humans need humans to try, right? Like, I mean, this obviously not, I'm not breaking news here. But sometimes I think we forget, because we spend so much time on social media, how important is like offline in-person relationship. Like, you know, now I run a meetup every Saturday morning. Literally, it's a weekly meetup, which is not easy. And, you know, we have 5-10 people. And it's like, for me, it's like the highlight of the week. Oh, I have my meetup tomorrow morning. I'm going to spend 1.5 hours. And we have arguments, we debate. You know, if you've been to meetup, you know, it's very lively. It can be very lively. And for me, it's like, oh, man, this is literally why I built this app. And, you know, so what can you do with the app? So number one, you can find local Bitcoiners. Now, we only use approximate geolocation. We don't deliver pizza, so we don't need to know your address. So it's a 10 miles radius. You can actually turn that off, by the way. We don't do ads because we have the paywall. There's no ads, which means we don't really care about you. We don't sell your data, right? And so you can find approximately nearby Bitcoiners, like, you know, 10 miles. Then we rounded up everything to make it even more private, whatever. And so, and then we have all the events. Actually, we have the largest repository of Bitcoin-only events in the world. I think we have 450 events today. So basically, pretty much, yeah, everywhere in the world you are, I mean, not everywhere, but, you know, most of the big cities have some meetups, some conference, something. They're all on Orange Bell app. And then we launched Merchants almost a year ago. So you can, if you want to spend Bitcoin, which unfortunately most Bitcoiners don't want to, but at some point they will. And, you know, this is very philosophical, because maybe we don't have time for that, but I think it's smart to build your local network of Bitcoiners, like the butcher, the doctor, the gas station owner, the, you name it, the hair salon. Now, Cham won. We're not going to get CBDC. But Kamala could have won. We could have got CBDC in 6 months, in 2 years, right? If we get into that world, Bitcoin is going to be the only way you're going to be able to transact outside of that world. Because today you can just go and pay in cash, right? Which is great. However, you know, you can't get that much cash. You can't go to the bank and get $1 million in cash. They won't give it to you. So if you want to buy big stuff in also there's a 10,000 threshold for reporting, blah, blah. So building your local network of Bitcoiners, there's also like a cynical way to look at this. Like, you know, as Bitcoin goes up, the Bitcoiners that you know, they're going to become more successful and they're going to maybe start the business and maybe they're going to have this crazy part, whatever you want from life, right? Basically, so your Bitcoin, so there's something that I say, like everything trend to zero against Bitcoin, except Bitcoin friendship, right? Because maybe he's going to launch a podcast, he's going to interview Michael Saylor, he's going to get invited to the 100,000 party, which I want, obviously. So it's about, you know, it's about building your local, or if you're traveling. I mean, people have told me like, hey, I went to the city, to New York, I didn't know anybody. There's a story that I tell everybody. there's this NBA guy that joined the app literally when we launched because he was playing against the Lakers, came to the conference, downloaded the app. I have no idea what this guy is. I mean, I don't follow basketball. And then people would tell me, hey, man, I think you have a scammer. There's a guy that pretends to be an NBA player and he wants to give free tickets to NBA games. I'm like, Jesus, guy, we just launched. We already have a scammer. So I talked to the guy and said, hey, man, you know, sorry to ask you, but who the hell are you? And they say, and then we have the call eventually. So the guy actually won a championship with LeBron. And what he did, you probably know the guy is called Matthew Della Vedova. Is the Bitcoin max in the NBA. Now, he doesn't play in the NBA anymore, but, you know. And so what this guy did, again, this is an NBA champion, right? He would land in a city where he was playing. He would open the app. He would invite people to the game, free tickets, courtside ticket, post-game, on-court meetup with the guy. Everything for free. And it's like, would you pay $3 a month and then you get invited by an NBA player? So I asked, which is a good deal, right? And I asked the guy, and he's like, you know, you created something very special because, you know, he has hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram and Twitter. And like, if I send a tweet, hey, who wants free ticket to this Maverick game? I'm going to get 1,000 DM. I have no idea who these people are. I have no idea if they're in town, and definitely I have no idea if they're in Bitcoin. And because of Orange Flap, because we had the paywall, it's Bitcoin only. He was able to create this, you know, amazing experience that, you know, you would never be able to do otherwise. And eventually, by the way, eventually became our first investor, which was great, you know. And so that's some of this. Now, I'm not saying if you join the app, you're going to end up in an NBA game. You know, there's a pilot that is giving free, there's a pilot, I think, in Florida. He was giving free flight lessons to people on the app.
Oh, wow.
Just take you on a plane. You know, because at the end of the day, you know, because we are such in a small tribe, as Bitcoin Max, you know, let's call us Bitcoin Max. We're such a small tribe. It's kind of like being Jewish. I tell my wife, think about Jewish, right? That they really love each other. They do crazy things for each other, right? Because if I know you're a Bitcoin Maxi, I know you're being ridiculed in your life. People have made fun of you. They call you stupid, especially when the price crashed, right? And so we went through this kind of like, again, kind of a hero's journey, right? And we're still here. And so if I know you've done what I've done, it's kind of like going to the, in a way, it's kind of like if you're a veteran, you've been deployed to combat, you know, oh, this guy is one of us. I can go and, you know, I can take it on a plane with me and I can give you free tickets to NBA because there's a huge filter that you've gone through. And because of that, you can create this unique, again, there's people getting married, there's people starting business. I mean, that can go on and on and on. It's now, again, we have 14,000 members. I think we passed 1 million messages a few months ago. I don't know how many we have now, but, you know. And so it's all about, you know, it's all about creating the Bitcoin social layer offline instead of being online, which, by the way, being online is not censorship resistance, right? You know, your internet provider can shut you down. The government can tell your internet provider. You know, if you watch a spy movie, they never say, hey, let's get on Telegram or let's get on WhatsApp. They say, hey, let's meet at this bar in the middle of nowhere. Like the most, you know, in Bitcoin, we love censorship resistance and self-sovereignty and being left alone by the government. And when you think about it, the most censorship resistant relationship you can have is when you are offline. And you know the guy, and you know his phone number or his email, or maybe even where he lives, right? You can just go and meet the guy or the girl. And so, yeah, so that's what we do.
I love that, man. Well, I'll tell you what, I think you covered a lot of ground on that. I think those were you. I was going to ask you like some of your best stories. I think Matthew Della Vedova is a tough one to beat. And I could just say from personal experience, I've connected with a couple of people, met up with a guy actually probably a year ago. We were both happened to be going to the same soccer game and somehow connected and ended up messaging on OPA and We've stayed in touch since, so it's fun knowing that I can connect with people who I know I at least have a couple of common threads, you know, and you're not walking in blind. So if you didn't design it to be a dating app, I'm married, have three kids. That's long in my rearview mirror. But I could imagine someone saying, like, I want to find someone who likes Austrian economics and Bitcoin, and this would be the place to go if I were still in that stage of life. So, well, hey, man, I got one last question for you. We've already covered probably five of these, but I ask everyone at the end of the show, what's an unpopular opinion that you hold? And you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners while you're at it.
Oh,
anything different?
I might have already offended everybody.
See if you can do it once more. You got anything?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I believe the hyper-Bitcoinization is just a myth. I don't think we're ever going to get to hyper-Bitcoinization. And the reason why...
How are you defining hyper-Bitcoinization? Yeah, like a global Bitcoin standard?
Yeah, you could say that Bitcoin becomes the currency of the world or the global reserve currency. Like fiat dies, there's only Bitcoin. Obviously, there's hyper-Bitcoinization, obviously. Or you could say majority of the people own Bitcoin, like 51% of the world own Bitcoin, right? Which now today is probably like, I don't know, 2%, 3%. Whatever way you want to frame hyper-Bitcoinization, I wouldn't say it's 0% chance because nothing's 0% chance, right? But I would say it's almost 0% chance. And the reason why is because of human nature, right? Like sometimes it's like, people tell me, no, we're going to get hyper-Bitcoinization in 5 years. And I'm like, were you around during COVID? Did you forget that people literally wanted to be locked down? They let their family members die alone in the hospital. And they were cheering for that. They wanted kids to be masked. And they were cheering for that. But not like the fringe. No. Millions and millions of normal people. They were pro-lockdown, pro-mask, pro-vax mandate. Right? My body, my choice. Yeah, of course. Now, this was like literally 2 years ago, right? Now, you can go back in history. You can see the Nazi and the Stalin, all this disaster in human history. Basically, Bitcoin is freedom. It's a tool for freedom, right? At the end of the day, that's what it does. It gives you more freedom. Like I send money to my family in Italy. One click, I can send $1 million, $1. I can send as much as I want. I can't do that with the banking system, right? And that's Italy. Now imagine if you're North Korea or Iran or Russia or Ukraine, whatever. Bitcoin is a tool for freedom. And the reality is, most people don't want freedom. Most people want security. And again, COVID is the best example you can come out. And everybody was around, so people should remember this. But if you look at history, it's full of example, right? You know, there's a famous phrase, you know, if you choose security over freedom, you will get neither security nor freedom. But again, there is a biological reason why most people want security. You know, it's actually a survival mechanism. The example I give, and you know, I don't want to get too philosophical, like I'm a 6'1", 200-pound guy, 4 years old, right? Now, if there is a woman, there is a 5'3", 140 pounds, and we live in a jungle, I can do whatever the hell I want to that woman, right? If there's a guy that is 5'5 and hasn't trained martial arts or has any weapon and is 50 pounds less than me, I can do whatever I want with that person. And, you know, obviously there are people bigger than me. That's 300. So now, if you're a small guy or a small person, if you're incapable of defending yourself, the strategy for you to survive is to find the big guy and give them power so they defend you from the other big guys, which is basically the government, right? I'm describing the government. That's how government kind of came up. And so, you know, and you can look at elections all over the world, right? Like, you know, women majority vote left, men majority vote right, all over the world. It doesn't matter where. Why? Because it's biology. Because men usually, you know, I'm not going to generalize, but men are more like, okay, let's go after it. Let's go in the jungle. Let's find the prey and let's kill it. So we want to be left alone because we can take care of ourselves, all things being considered. And so, and that's, by the way, you know how you know this is true? Do we have a 100 push-up challenge in Bitcoin? Did I dream that up?
I think do people 100 push-ups still 100K?
Do people just literally post like going to the gym and buying Bitcoin, right? Now, that only happened in Bitcoin. Go look at the shitcoin. Nobody's doing any of that, right? That again, it's like if you look at the shitcoiner, the king of shitcoin is Vitalik. That guy has never done a push-up in his life. And now if you look at the, I don't know, the Breedlaw, the Michael, whatever, the Seyfedin, they're all like, yeah, you should eat well, you should care of yourself, you should work out every day. And this is not a coincidence. This is human nature. Humans adopting the best survival strategy they can find. And for most people, it's not freedom. It's more government, more babysitter, more guardrails, more police. I mean, I'm not against police, obviously, but you know, like a police state, right? Surveillance state. They love that stuff. Oh yeah, we're going to catch a terrorist. But yeah, all my privacy is gone, but at least we're going to catch terrorists. And so that's human nature, and it's not going to change because of Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin might exacerbate this tendency. So if you're like a freedom guy, you become more freedom, right? But if you are like a leftist, I love government because I need the government, not because I'm an idiot, because I need the government. I'm a small guy. I'm the weakest part of society. I need the government. And I completely understand. If I wasn't 6'1 and 200 pounds, probably I would be a leftist too. I don't know. And yeah, those people are not going to say, yes, let's, I mean, look at the Elizabeth Warren, right? I'm building an anti-crypto army. Yes, I get it. It's biology. Your constituency does not want Bitcoin because Bitcoin is a threat to the government and you need the government to thrive. So you hate Bitcoin. I get it. It's very straightforward. And so now, and that's why I don't think we ever going to get to a organization because human nature is not going to change. There's always going to be the strongest part of society and the weakest part of society. And by the way, that's, you know, I don't want to go on and on, but one of the reasons why, for example, the food supply chain in the US is so fucked up is because of that. Because the weakest you become, the more you need the government. So the government is in cahoot with the big pharma and the big food to make people sicker, sicker, all that kind of stuff, right? Which is why they hate RFK Jr. Don't they hate RFK Jr.? Yeah. Right? Don't they literally, everybody hates maybe even more than Trump because he's pointing the finger at one of the biggest source of weakness that makes people weak. The weaker the people, the more they want the government. So the people in power, they don't want people to go work out 24/7. I mean, during COVID, if you remember, nobody said, you know what? Maybe it's a good idea to go outside in the sun and go for a run and be healthy. No. Take the vaccine, take this 1,000 medicine, right? So, I think Bitcoin as a financial asset is the best. It has been the best. It will continue to be the best. It would definitely reorient some part of society to a more like, low-time preference, all that kind of stuff. I don't see how people that were for the vax mandate are gonna adopt Bitcoin. Honestly.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, they might buy it in the ETF to make money. That's, for me, that's not IP Bitcoinization. For me, it's like, okay, you're making money. Okay, that's great. So I buy an Apple, but they're not going to say, let's get rid of fiat, let's use Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is the biggest threat to the government.
Yeah. Well, because those people are still beholden to the legacy system. By virtue of adopting Bitcoin's number go up attribute only, they have gained no freedom. And so, you know, I mean, the only reason Bitcoin is freedom is because of its attributes that extend well beyond number go up, like censorship resistance and, you know, portability and self-custody and all the right things that we stand for at the Bitcoin way. So basically your thesis is something approximating, because there are so many weak people who need someone bigger, i.e. the government, hyper-Bitcoinization is a myth. And so until maybe weak people are a much smaller percentage of the population, we shouldn't hold out hope.
You sound like a German politician from the 20s now. That wanted to get rid of weak people.
I want people to be stronger. I don't want them to be I don't want them to be terminated. I want them to find a better way.
I agree.
And I think it's an interesting. I've heard the unpopular opinion of no hyper-Bitcoinization. That's an interesting take on it. And I think you managed to probably piss off two groups of people, both the hyper-Bitcoinization maxis and the people who maybe are still confused that there are biological differences between men and women. So
excellent.
You nailed it.
Excellent. Yes.
All righty. Well, hey, Mateo, why don't you give a handoff, tell people where they can find you, learn more about the Orange Pill app?
Sure. So, you know, I'm on Twitter too much, honestly. At Matteo Pellig. Just search my name, Matteo Pellegrini. The easiest way to reach me is Orange Pill app. I obviously check on my DM. I reply to all the DM. Orangefullapp.com, or you can just download the app from App Store or Google Play Store, Orange Pill app.
Perfect. Mateo, man, thank you so much for your time. This was an absolute blast. I think we need to connect in person sometime, because I think we'd have some fun conversations.
I'd love to.
All righty. You take care. Have a great one.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Ciao.
And that's a wrap. Again, hope you enjoyed the conversation. Really appreciated Mateo taking the time. If you enjoyed this, do me a huge favor. Subscribe to the channel. Give us a like, comment, reshare it with someone who you think might be interested. Would really appreciate it. Of course, make sure you check out the Orange Pill app and everything that Mateo and his team are doing. It's awesome. Go follow him on X as well. And of course, if you need help with proper Bitcoin self-custody done the right way the first time, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast and schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We also help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones, Plan B residency options. Again, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can follow us on X as well. It's at @thebitcoinway_. You can follow me there, send me a message, DM me. Let me know what you think. Give me any suggestions for the show. It's at @theothermjordan. And until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.